Section 3, The Great Depression. As you read, look for the following. The reasons why the country plunged into the Great Depression. How the government tried to help. How people lived their lives in those difficult times. Vocabulary terms. Stock market, stock, profit, law of supply and demand, credit, interest, depression, dust bowl, New Deal, ragtime, blues, jazz. One way the health of the economy is measured is by how well the stock market is doing. The stock market is where shares of ownership in corporations are bought and sold. In 1929, the stock market appeared to be doing very well, but these seemingly good times were hiding serious problems in the economy. Page 241. The start of the Depression. Corporations sell stock, which gives buyers a share of ownership in the company. When a corporation does well, the price of its stock goes up, increasing its value. Stockholders can sell the stocks and make a profit. That is, they can sell it for a higher price than what they paid for it. During the 1920s, the prices of stocks kept going up and up, even if the companies were not doing well. This is because so many people wanted to buy stocks, creating a demand for them. In our economy, if the demand for something that has a limited supply increases, the price also usually increases. On the other hand, the more of a supply of a good there is, the lower the price. This is called the law of supply and demand. Many people were buying stock on credit. That is, they borrowed money to buy the stock. They hoped that the price would go up so they could use part of the profit to pay back the borrowed money. This worked as long as stock prices kept rising. But in the fall of 1929, the American economy grew weaker as companies found they could no longer sell their goods. The value of the companies went down. This meant that the price of the shares of their stock also went down. In late October, stock prices plunged, went down steeply. People rushed to sell their stocks before the price went down too far. But the large number of people suddenly selling stocks, which increased the supply, made the prices fall even faster and farther like a falling plane. That is why we say the stock market crashed. People owning stocks either had to sell them at prices too low to make a profit, or could find no buyers at all. Many of their stocks were worthless, as the companies they had stock in were broke or went out of business. The people who had borrowed money to buy their stocks could not pay the money back. Banks are businesses that make a profit by lending money and charging interest. Interest is a fee for the use of money, usually set as a percentage of the amount borrowed. When people cannot pay back their loans, the banks lose money. If they lose too much, the banks are said to fail. Page 242. In 1929 and 1930, this happened a lot. People who had kept their money in the banks lost everything. Today, the federal government promises that people will get their money back if a bank fails. In 1930, there was no such promise. As banks and businesses went out of business, many people lost their jobs. As more and more people were out of work or lost their money in failed banks, fewer people could afford to buy the goods made by American factories. Still more companies went out of business, and still more people lost their jobs. When all of these bad things happen in an economy, economists, people who study the economy, say we are in a depression, like a balloon that is losing its air. There have been other depressions in our nation's history, but never were so many people and so many businesses affected so severely for so long. That is why the period from 1929 to 1941 is called the Great Depression. At the same time, farmers in the Great Plains were suffering through a long drought that turned their fields to dust. Sometimes the dust was blown by the wind into large dust storms that blackened the skies. People came to call the Great Plains the Dust Bowl. Many farmers migrated west to California and other western states to find work. Did you know? In the summer of 1936, the temperature in Missouri was above 100 degrees on 40 different days. Page 243. The New Deal. More than one-fourth of working Missourians lost their jobs in the Great Depression. Those who still had jobs were often only making half of what they used to make. People found themselves standing in long lines waiting for handouts of food. Others lost their homes and had to live in tents or shacks. Something had to be done. In 1932, Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected President of the United States. He had a number of ideas about how to help people and help the country get out of the Depression. He called his ideas the New Deal. Many New Deal programs put people to work, building roads, parks, and public buildings. Drive around Missouri today, and you will see many county courthouses, schools, parks, swimming pools, and roads built by these workers. Other workers planted forests and worked on projects to stop soil and water erosion. Still others were hired by the government to write or take photographs or paint pictures about the country and its people and how they were coping with the Depression. Some of the farmers who lost their land became tenant farmers or moved to the cities to look for work. But some New Deal programs helped farmers too. When the Depression began, most farmers did not have electricity. A New Deal program brought electricity to rural Missouri, making the lives of farm families easier and brighter. Page 244, Spotlight. Sharecroppers' Rebellion. Perhaps the hardest hit of all by the Depression were black farm workers. Many were tenant farmers or sharecroppers who worked for a share of the crops they grew for the landowners. The sharecroppers, both black and white, were very poor. The amount of money a sharecropper made in 1 year would not even buy a pair of basketball shoes today. Sharecropper families lived in shacks and had few new clothes. Some sharecropper children went without shoes or without coats in winter. Few went to school. Many died at a young age from disease and malnutrition, not having enough healthy food. As the Depression became worse, conditions for farmers grew worse. Owen Whitfield was an African-American minister from the Boot Hill. He organized efforts to draw attention to the plight of the sharecroppers and to try to get help for them. He encouraged the sharecroppers to ask for higher wages and better living conditions. Some refused to work until the conditions improved. In response, on January 1, 1939, landowners in the Boot Hill evicted their sharecroppers. To evict is to force a person off the land. The evicted families were left without shelter in winter and little food. The sharecroppers and their families carried their few possessions on their backs or in carts. They set up tents and other makeshift shelters along two highways. For weeks, the newspapers carried stories about the sharecroppers and their rebellion. One of the newspapers called the sharecroppers Missouri's refugees. The late Dr. Lorenzo J. Green was a professor of history at Lincoln University and a civil rights leader in Missouri for many years. He spent a weekend with sharecroppers camped along the highway near Charleston. He described what he saw. "What I saw shocked me. Little children with their bellies swollen from lack of food. Men, women, and children barefoot in the slush and snow. Girls and women scantily clothed, wearing anything to keep warm. Shelters made of cardboard, tin, pieces of wood, twigs. Girls and women cooking out of doors with snow and sleet falling into their kettles." Dr. Green returned to Lincoln University and told his students what he had found. The students, who had been busy planning a spring dance, instead donated the money for food and clothing and medicine. The students took a truckload of supplies to the sharecroppers, returning several times as the protest continued. Largely because of the attention Dr. Green and others drew to the sharecroppers through writings and letters, the state eventually provided some assistance. The nonviolent Sharecroppers Rebellion also led the federal government to step in and help. The government relocated some to places where workers were needed. Most, though, were moved to new communities near Poplar Bluff and Lilbourne, with low-cost housing built just for the sharecropper families. Food and clothing cooperatives were formed. The community and the cooperative still exist today in Lilbourne. Page 246. Life goes on. Even though times were hard and people were poor, there was still much to do that was fun. One popular activity was listening to the radio. Missouri's first radio station was WEW in St. Louis. It was only the second station in the country when it went on the air in 1921. People listened to soap operas, cooking shows, comedies, and crime dramas, mystery and adventure shows, music, news, and sports. There were even after-school programs for children. Movies were also popular during the Depression. They were a way for people to forget about their troubles for a couple of hours. On Saturday afternoons, kids could pay a nickel and see cartoons, a Western movie, and an adventure serial, a story that continued each week. In many towns, the movie theater was the only public building with air conditioning, which made it very popular in the summertime. Movie theaters also doubled as stages where traveling entertainers performed skits and played music. This type of entertainment was called vaudeville. Among the cartoons seen at the movies were those featuring a mouse named Mickey. He was the creation of an artist named Walt Disney. Disney had lived for a while in Marceline in northwest Missouri and had gone to art school in Kansas City. He later moved to California and started a studio to create cartoons and animated features such as Snow White. He later built a theme park called Disneyland. Disney's cartoon characters are now famous around the world. The company he started is one of the biggest and most successful entertainment businesses in the world. Did you know? During World War I, Walt Disney drove an ambulance in France for the Red Cross. Page 247. Music. Missouri is famous for three types of music that developed in the early 1900s. The first is ragtime, a blend of Negro spirituals, marching music, and popular tunes played with a quick beat, usually on a piano. One of the most famous ragtime composers was Scott Joplin, who lived in Sedalia for a short time and later in St. Louis. He wrote several well-known ragtime compositions. Perhaps the most famous, the Maple Leaf Rag, was named after a tavern in Sedalia where Joplin played the piano when not working for the railroad. His house in St. Louis is now a state historic site. Ragtime was an early version of the blues, a musical style based on black folk music. The blues did not begin in Missouri, but many famous blues players, performers, and composers were from or lived in Missouri. One of them was W.C. Handy, who spent some time in St. Louis and later wrote the very popular tune, the St. Louis Blues. Missouri was also a favorite stopping place for musicians who played jazz, a music style that is more upbeat than the blues and depends a lot on the skill of the musicians. Some of the most famous jazz musicians, people like Count Basie and Benny Moten, called Kansas City home and became famous for their Kansas City sound. At the same time, ragtime, the blues, and jazz were becoming popular. Phonograph records and radio stations were featuring what was called old-time music or hillbilly music. Today it is called bluegrass music. Played on fiddle, banjo, and sometimes guitar, this music with roots in the Appalachian and Ozark Mountains was the beginnings of country and western music. Page 248. Music in the home was also popular. Many homes had phonographs, also called record players or Victrolas, and a lot of families had pianos. Most towns had a band that performed on a bandstand in the middle of the town park each Sunday afternoon and on holidays. Literature. Reading remained a favorite pastime for many people. One of the most read books during this time was Shepherd of the Hills by Harold Bell Wright. He used his experiences as a city-born minister working in the Ozarks to create his stories. Missouri was the birthplace of three famous poets from this time. Sarah Teasdale wrote poems about nature and love in poems like Spring Night. She was born in St. Louis. Mary Ann Moore often wrote about nature in such poems as Oh, to Be a Dragon. Later, she won the Pulitzer Prize. She was born in Kirkwood. T.S. Eliot wrote most of his poetry after moving from his native St. Louis to England. Some of his poems were the basis for the musical Cats. Baseball. Missourians enjoyed many sports in the first half of the 20th century. Golf and miniature golf. Badminton and tennis. Football and softball all became popular during this time. But far and wide, the most popular sport was baseball. Most towns had a team that played teams from neighboring towns, usually on Sunday afternoons. The players worked at their real jobs the other 6 days of the week. Children of all ages played baseball on empty lots and playgrounds, and even in the streets of the cities, in parks and on baseball diamonds in the towns, and in pastures on the farms. Page 249. St. Louis had two major league teams, the Cardinals and the Browns. The Cardinals won the National League pennant six times between 1926 and 1944 and won the World Series four times. In 1944, the Cardinals won the World Series by beating the Browns, the American League champions, the first and only time the Browns were champions. The Cardinal teams in the 1930s were called the Gas House Gang for their rough and exciting style of play. The team was led by two pitchers, brothers Dizzy, Jerome, and Daffy, Paul, Dean. The Cardinals and Browns were not the only professional teams in Missouri. Only white players were allowed on major league teams. So black players formed their own leagues, which were called the Negro Leagues. Two of the best Negro League players were pitchers Satchel Paige of the Kansas City Monarchs and Cool Papa Bell of the St. Louis Stars. Bell was said to be so fast that he could turn off the bedroom light and be back in bed before the room was dark. You can learn more about the Negro Leagues at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. Did you know? One of Satchel Paige's memorable quotes was, "Don't look back. Something might be gaining on you." Do you remember? Number one, why did the stock market crash? Number two, for what three types of music was Missouri known? Number three, name five ways people had fun or enjoyed themselves in the 1930s. Page 250, Missouri Places. Negro Leagues Baseball and American Jazz Museums. These days, walking in the neighborhood of 18th and Vine Streets, just east of downtown Kansas City, it is hard to imagine that there was a time when the air was filled with music, the streets were crowded with people, and you could run into famous jazz musicians and baseball stars. But walk through the doors of the snazzy building at 1616 East 18th Street, and you'll hear echoes of that exciting past. The building is the home of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, NLBM, and the American Jazz Museum. It is in the heart of the neighborhood where the Kansas City sound of jazz was born, and just a short walk from where the Negro National League was born. African Americans had been playing baseball as long as the game has been played. In the beginning, they played alongside white players. But laws segregating blacks from whites and Major League Baseball's own rules forced most black players from the professional teams by 1900. Instead, the black players formed their own teams and leagues. In 1920, organizers met at the Paseo YMCA in Kansas City to form the Negro National League. Kansas City was home to several Negro League baseball teams over the years, but the most famous of them was the Monarchs. The most famous Monarch was Jackie Robinson. Robinson later became the first black player in the modern major leagues in 1946. As more and more black players joined major league teams, there was no longer a need for the Negro League teams, and they disappeared in the 1960s. But the Negro League lives on at the NLBM. Inside, you will see hundreds of artifacts, including uniforms and equipment used by Negro League stars. You'll see photos of the players, games, and ballparks. You'll read newspaper accounts of famous moments in league history. You'll also see the signs and other artifacts that remind us that black players and black fans were once unwelcome. At the end of your tour, you can stand on a baseball diamond alongside life-size statues of some of black baseball's greatest stars, men like Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Buck O'Neill, and Cool Papa Bell. Just across the lobby from the Baseball Museum is the American Jazz Museum, AJM. Here you can see photos and memorabilia of jazz artists such as Ella Fitzgerald, Charlie Parker, and Count Basie. Best of all, you can hear recordings of the great jazz performances by them and more than 100 other artists. The AJM also has an interactive feature. Visitors can play along with great jazz artists, challenging them to choose from different drum beats, guitar riffs, or piano accompaniments to see if they can match the choices made by the original artist. The Gym Theater in the museum hosts concerts, festivals, and other community events. The museum also has a working club, the Blue Room, where musicians appear almost nightly to perform jazz before live audiences. The Blue Room receives a scene that was repeated in dozens of similar clubs in the 18th and Vine neighborhood during the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, when Kansas City was the place to go to hear the latest jazz compositions and to see the greatest jazz musicians.